Here is the latest Higher Summits forecast brought to you by our friends at the Mount Washington Observatory.
Weather above treeline in the White Mountains is often wildly different than at our trailheads. Before you hike, check the Higher Summits forecast at mountwashington.org. Weather observers working at the nonprofit Mount Washington Observatory write this elevation-based forecast every morning and afternoon. Search and rescue teams, avalanche experts, and backcountry guides all rely on the Higher Summits forecast to anticipate weather conditions above treeline. You should too. Go to mountwashington.org or text FORECAST to 603-356-2137.
And here's your forecast for Friday, March 22nd, and Saturday, March 23rd. We have an alert, a wind chill advisory in effect through 2 p.m. Friday, and a winter storm watch in effect 12 a.m. Eastern time Saturday through 5 a.m. Eastern time Sunday. So we have a big storm coming, apparently, and let's see, so Friday, mostly in the clear under increasingly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-single digits. Winds will be northwest, shifting west at 55 to 75 miles per hour, with gusts up to 95 miles per hour early, decreasing to 35 to 50 miles per hour in the afternoon. Wind chill will be 40 below to 50 below, rising to 20 below to 30 below. Friday night, in the clear, trending into the clouds under mostly cloudy skies, a slight chance of snow showers in the evening, becoming likely after midnight and transitioning to snow late, with a possible snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches. The low is going to be mid-single digits, rising to the lower teens, with winds southwest 35 to 50 miles per hour, with gusts up to 75. And the winter there will be rising to 10 below to 20 below. Now, Saturday, in the clouds with snow, heavy at times, possibly mixing with sleet at times during the afternoon, possible snow accumulations of 8 to 12 inches, with a high rising into the lower 20s, winds southwest 45 to 60 miles an hour with gusts up to 75 miles per hour, and the wind chill will be 10 to 20 below, rising to 5 below to 5 above late.
Broadcasting from the Woodpecker Studio in the great state of New Hampshire, welcome to the Sounds Like a Search and Rescue podcast, where we discuss all things related to hiking and search and rescue in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Here are your hosts, Mike and Stump.
Crack open. All right, Stomp. Episode 144.
All right.
Welcome, welcome.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like I don't even know you right now. So for the listeners, Stomp has, that's the real background, right? That's not like just like a,
yes,
an image that you're, it's a real background?
Yeah, that's the real deal. Yeah, I'm in a new room.
So Stomp is in like, usually he's in like this dark, like wide open cavern.
Right.
But you're in a new room. So is this room guest friendly? Like, what if we have guests? Are you going to be able to accommodate?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if to my side over here, to my left, maybe your right, you can see Mrs. Stomp's ginormous beanbag chair that she has. That's brand new. And over to my other side is a trundle, which is cool. But there's tons of room, and it's all set up for guests, and it's just absolutely nice and airy. This is natural light. illuminating me.
Yeah, I can see you now.
I know,
which
right?
Which is that's not optimal.
That's not great.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a little too much detail, but I'll deal with it.
I'm up, I'm up at elevation now, so the air's a lot thinner and cleaner up here, so when I get back down to elevation, I'm going to be crushing you guys in terms of speed and everything else.
True. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What's a trundle? You said you have a trundle. What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's like a futon with a pull-out guest bed underneath. So it's the size of a single bed. It's really nice. I would show you, but if I touch my camera, it might shut off, and I'm terrified of my camera.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do that. Yeah. Oh, I get it. All right. It's like a trundle bed. Got it.
Exactly.
All right. Never mind. I had a brain fart there for a minute.
Two levels. But I hope to have some guests up here soon. Sounds really nice. The acoustics are great. And much better than that dark, dingy man cave down below.
Yeah. How are the cats reacting to it? What is their vibe?
They're a little stressed out about it. The biggest problem is they used to climb into the windows that are behind my monitor. So every now and then Daphne tries to get up, and it's a big no-no because now there's $1,000 monitor speakers on either side that can get broken very easily with a cat nail.
Yeah,
that's my worst fear.
Yeah, well, good luck. But all right, Stomp. So welcome to episode 144 of the Sounds Like a Search and Rescue podcast. We're back to normal here after being off for a week to get settled. So this week we discussed the journey of completing the winter 4,000 footer list. So this was, last weekend was like the weekend for a bunch of people to finish the list. So we're going to give a little bit of an overview about, you know, what it takes to plan and finish the winter 4,000 footer list. And I'll talk a little bit about sort of the evolution of the gear that I've used and you know, my philosophy on how I went about it. So hopefully that will be helpful to some other people that are planning it. In addition to that, we have a White Mountain history story about the loss of life during a 1928 Dartmouth Outing Club hike. We already talked about Stomp's new studio, but we'll probably talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk about the revival of a once desolate region of Utah and Arizona that has come back to life and is starting to become a hiker's paradise. We've got Lodge to Dodge news, we've got notable hikes, and we've got recent search and rescue news. So I'm Mike.
And I'm Stomp. Let's get started, shall we?
Get started. All right, so yeah, let's get into the hiking buddy spot.
Here we go. New tip coming.
This is Ben Pease from Hiking Buddies. We are a 501c3 nonprofit committed to reducing avoidable tragedies through education, impactful projects, and fostering a community of support. You can find out more at hikingbuddies.org. We wanted to say thank you to those who have supported our mission, and most importantly, say thanks to those who speak up, who ask questions, and who are willing to provide guidance and assistance on the trails when needed. You embody what it means to be a hiking buddy. And now, for all my newer hikers out there, here's this episode's Hiking Buddies Quick Tip.
Leave No Trace, principles number 6 and 7. Respect wildlife and be considerate of other visitors. This is not the time for a boombox. Do not ask invasive questions. And please, don't leave dog poo on the trail.
All right, so that is the Stomp, if I remember correctly, that's the last one where Lynn, our friend Lynn, is doing the voiceover. Now we're going to be moving to Andrew Barlow.
That is right. Yeah, we have a little bit of an accent coming in and some nice,
James
tasty
Bond.
New music.
Yeah.
We had a good time recording that, by the way. He's a riot.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
How many different clips did you put together with him?
Gee whiz, probably 30 plus. Yeah, we were there together for a couple hours, and Lynn came over as well. She was the director, And we had a lot of laughs. And yeah, we've got some nice springtime and summer tips coming your way. So that should be interesting. And yeah.
Well, awesome. Yeah, it should be mud season, but we've got a spring snowstorm rolling in, right?
Yeah, what's up with that, huh? I just looked at the forecast down here for Thornton, and they're calling for 15 inches through Saturday. That's really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's spring, but it's still March. You know, what can you do? It's still early. We've had storms later. But that's a good amount.
I think we're going to get... We're going to get like a half an inch or an inch of snow, and then it's going to turn over to rain on Saturday. So, all right. Well,
yeah. But we're ready to go. I'll be flying solo with the kiddies. Mrs. Stomp is in South Carolina for the weekend with the fam, just having a great girls' weekend out. So I'll just be here braving the storm all by my lonesome.
Yeah, I got Mrs. Mike is actually flying out to Florida tomorrow, so I'll be. You know, one thing about our wives, Stomp, that I'll say,
they like to get away from us.
Is Mrs. Stomp and Mrs. Mike? They love to travel.
Oh, okay.
Specifically without us.
Right. Yeah, they like
I
to escape.
A pattern there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I don't blame them. I mean, if I live with me, I would escape too.
It's a little suspicious.
Yeah. Well, that's good for her. I hope she has a good time here, Stomp. I've been into video games, so I highly recommend a little Harry Potter for you.
Oh, see, that'll work as long as I have power, but I am convinced that I will lose power. Every storm this season, I've lost it. So I have all the wood stacked up ready to go. I've got a couple good books. I don't know. We shall see. This area below Welch Dickey is just prone to outages. It happens all the time.
Yeah, you have bad luck.
Yeah, serious.
Yeah, well, good luck to you there. So very good. And then, so we got a couple of stories that you pulled here, Stomp. Thanks. I actually grabbed one or two as well, so yeah. I'll take credit. but this first one here, Laconia Daily Sun, ice out complete on March 17th, super early. So ice out is essentially where all the ice is gone from Lake Winnipesaukee. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I've been watching that. It happens generally a little later. But the big question is, was there ever an ice in? Meaning, was there full ice pack on the lake? I don't know.
Yeah.
I know they had to move the hockey game had to move over away from the lake over to Waukewan for the hockey classic, pond hockey.
Oh, they didn't do it in Alton Bay?
No, they had it. Well, I don't even think that's Alton Bay, but down in Meredith. I'm not sure what section that is, but anyway. Who knows?
Huh. Yeah. There's no arguing, you know, whatever you think about climate change, there's no arguing that this year was a warmer, wetter winter than, you know, we had hoped for. But then again, you had pulled that story about that, explosion in Tonga that had put all of that
ash
water vapor into the atmosphere. And you know, that article that we had talked about in November or December proved to be pretty accurate in my view.
Yeah. It's complicated. It's a complex system.
It is. It's a complex system of moving parts, and me and you are never going to be smart enough to know what's going on there.
Yep.
But earlier we talked about James Bond. Speaking of James Bond, Pierce Brosnan, we've been covering this story. So Pierce, I always thought he was a cool dude, but I guess he's an entitled, don't you know who I am type of guy.
Yeah, apparently so. But his coolness caught up with him, I guess. Is too cool.
Yeah. So he was at Yellowstone last November, and he decided that he was going to walk into the restricted Mammoth Hot Springs area to take a photo. And because of that, I think he posted it online, and somebody busted him, and he ended up getting summons to court. So he pled guilty. He ultimately did the right thing. So he told the court he felt embarrassed and ashamed since the violation was publicized everywhere. And ultimately the apologetic James Bond actor escaped relatively unscathed. So he was able to do a Zoom hearing, which is good. And he pled out to the Yellowstone Justice Center in Mammoth. He was represented by a lawyer, and he agreed to plead guilty to a Class B misdemeanor, and he's going to pay $5,000 fine and then 2 years of unsupervised probation.
That's actually a pretty hefty fine penalty for somebody to do that. That's wild. That's a lot of Jenga.
Well, I guess the judge agreed with you, Stomp, because Judge Stephanie Hambrick decided to be more lenient with Brosnan, and she only sentenced him to pay $1,500 without any probation. And she said, I'm sure you will not be doing this behavior again. I'm convinced that you learned your lesson.
See? Eighth Amendment. There we go. That's the proper application of the Eighth Amendment. Thank you, Judge. Yeah. So I still find it goofy that somebody that's been in the public eye for so many decades would not realize that he'd be making a viral video. Like, come on. But anyway.
Yeah. And Brosnan said that he thought that she was a very good judge. I would do that as well because she hooked him up. Yeah. And then they were also, I guess he was chatting a little bit about some of the projects. So he's got three upcoming projects lined up, including the adaption of a book called The Thursday Murder Club with Helen Mirren and Ben Kingsley. So,
excellent. Yeah,
I think both Helen Mirren and Ben Kingsley are knighted or whatever that equivalent is in the UK. So it's Dame Helen and then Sir Ben Kingsley. So,
wow. Was he telling the judge that?
No. I guess he was chatting with his lawyer like before the Zoom started. And, people picked it up.
It's funny that made it into the story. Oh, brother.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So ultimately he had two infractions, foot travel in a thermal area and a closure violation. So there I guess they dropped the second charge of a closure violation and just focused on the foot travel in a thermal area.
Hmm. All right, folks, be careful out there.
Yep. Highly embarrassed and ashamed.
Yes, I'm sure.
Shame. That would be a good section to put the shame drop into, Stomp.
Resurrect the shame drop? Oh.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Mark that time there. All right, upcoming events here, Stomp. So we've got the AMC dinner on April 20th.
Yeah.
Me and you, I'm going. Are you going?
I am going, yes. Remember, this is my anniversary. Mrs. Stomp is a saint for letting me go. Actually, she may be there as well, manning the table with us.
Yeah. I gotta send in my application and see if they can slide me in. I don't know if I missed a deadline or not.
Oh, well, I think you should pull a Pierce Brosnan and run up on stage.
Yes. but it should be a good crowd there. So, looking forward to that. And then, are we gonna have merch there? Should we buy some merch? Or can we sell merch there? Or is that not allowed?
I think we could, but we would have to pre-order those for this. We will definitely have all the various stickers that we have in stock and some other stuff from other people that we have supported over in the past, whether it be Fantasy Pants and 48 Peaks. And we'll be there just to hang out and chat with everybody. Spread the word.
Okay. Very good. And then, so we'll look forward to seeing all the hikers there. And then we've got 48 Peaks June 8th at Reckless. So you wanted to mention something, Stomp. Why don't you give the background on this one?
Yeah. So June 8th is the celebration at Reckless for the 48 Peaks Alzheimer's event. And we will be having some representatives from 48 Peaks coming on in a couple weeks to discuss the event in full detail. And I got a message from one person. His name is Adam Galusha, and I did just want to mention this. We'll provide the link. He's actually the captain for Team Eastern Mountain Sports, and he just wanted to say, hey, if you can plug this, that'd be great. If I could come on, that'd be even better. But there's no way we could have all the different teams come on. So we will have 48 Peaks come on to represent the whole entire affair. But good luck, Adam, and we wish you guys the best during your fundraising efforts.
Got it. All right, and then there's a fundraising page. All right, so I will I'll put Adam's fundraising page in the show notes.
Yeah,
and, they're on their way. They're getting there.
So oh yeah,
that's good.
Absolutely.
All right, Stomps. Yeah, a lot going on. As a matter of fact, I was at Reckless on Saturday, and it's good time. So I'll talk about that later. But I pulled a story here. I thought, I didn't pull this. Our friend Al sent this over, and I thought it was interesting. Al kind of knows my vibe for sure because every once in a while, he'll throw like a non-hiking or sort of a peripheral story, and he'll be like, oh, I feel like this would be up your alley. And he's 100% right about this one. So do you remember back probably 10, 12 years ago, it was all over Dateline, there was a guy by the name of Warren Jeffs. And he was a, the FLDS, like the Fundamental Latter-day Saints. He was like the head of this sect.
Okay.
That was in, there's these two towns. There's a town called Colorado City, Arizona, and then there's a town right next to it, which is Hilldale, Utah. Mm-hmm. And Warren Jeffs essentially, he had the polygamous marriages.
Yeah.
So he had like something like 50 or 60 wives, right? And these two towns were essentially taken over by this FLDS. It's essentially a cult. And the guy, you know, had his inner circle, and the men that had the power essentially had like a bunch of different wives there. So eventually, like, those types of arrangements don't last. The young men don't do well, because there's only a certain number of men that can have wives, because if they all have 10 to 12 wives, then you got to start kicking some of the boys out. So that's what ended up happening, is they kicked a lot of the boys out. They took over the whole police department. They took over all of the city government functions. So like Dateline NBC would go into this place, and literally like they would get pulled over immediately by the sheriff, who's part of the FLDS cult. And, you know, the whole town was just basically taken over by this religious cult. So really creepy, like a sort of a horror movie type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But located right on the Arizona-Utah line, right by Zion National Park. So maybe I think about an hour away.
Yeah.
So this place was desolate. It was basically like, you know, women that wore like the, you know, the long dresses, and they were on their compounds, and, you know, it was a really stern place where, you know, outsiders were never welcome. So fast forward, this guy Warren Jeffs ends up getting arrested. They tried to keep the sect going for a while, but I think it's mostly fallen apart at this point. So now, fast forward over the last 5 years or so, Colorado City, Arizona, and Hilldale, Utah have now, they've kind of gone through a renaissance, where some of the people that had left the cult, one of Warren Jeffs' relatives is now the mayor of Hilldale, Utah. And then they've also essentially like cleaned up all of the police force, and they've sold all the property that belonged to the cult to private citizens. And lo and behold, what people have realized is that like this place has all of the sort of features and hiking and everything that you find at Zion. And like they have like their own version of the Narrows, you know, the Narrows in that area.
Yeah.
And
Slot Canyon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like these Slot Canyons and stuff. It's like an amazing area. And they've got like a vineyard out there too now that's built up. And some guys have come in and actually bought some property and set up like a hostel for hikers and things like that. So it's had like a renaissance, where it went from this like very children of the corn, like scary place, to now it's like a hiker's paradise.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So they had no access really to get into the area.
Yeah, I mean, you could go into the town, but like if you weren't a local or part of the FLDS like cult, you were essentially like, you know, the cops would give you a hard time. Like reporters would go in there and try to like interview people, and the police would like arrest them, harass them. Like you can go on, you see these 2020 episodes. The place looks scary as hell, because the police force was completely taken over by this cult leader.
Wow.
Sheesh. There's all kinds of bad stuff going on. I mean, obviously, like people that have 50, 60 wives, like eventually they start to, you know, it starts coming out that there's a lot of abuse going on with the kids too. So it's really scary stuff.
Yeah. Wow. I can't imagine that many wives.
I can't. Mrs. Mike is, that's a handful. But that's an interesting story, I thought, is that, you know, from dark days to becoming a hiker's paradise. So maybe we'll check it out someday.
Yeah. I'm sure there are places locally that are in a similar dynamic.
I don't know. I don't know anything about, like I said, Mrs. Mike, I'm happy with one wife.
So. Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the restrictions. Yeah. Like, you're not welcome. Wink, wink.
Oh, yeah. I don't really know. Are there towns like that around here?
Not that I've experienced, but it's never too late. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe you can start your own stomp.
Yeah, move way north. So, way north.
Yes. Yeah. But anyway, I will link the articles in the show notes, and it's pretty interesting. But if you ever want to go down a rabbit hole, like Warren Jeffs and that whole story is just like bizarre. All right. Next up, eclipse planning. What's your plan? Apparently, I read an article that said 170,000 people are expected to be up in that area.
Yeah.
Between Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine.
I have no plans, really. I learned from Stephen Reckless that the path of totality is really falling up by Lancaster. So I'm not entirely sure if I'll be able to see it from where I am because I'll be working that day. I'm not planning on taking time off for this.
Oh, so you're not doing anything special?
No, definitely not. I could care less. I've seen one before, and that's an episode itself, that story, but I'll save that. Okay. But yeah, Lancaster or bust, but we shall see. I have heard predictions that it will be rainy and cloudy. Who knows?
It's too far out.
It is. I don't know. Some good sources looking at long trends, but yeah, you never know. What are you doing?
I think I'm going to be overseas, so I'm not going to be around. Unfortunately, but I'll update the audience on my adventures soon enough.
Well, wait a minute. So what's the date again, just to refresh my memory?
April 8th.
I know it's a Monday.
Yeah. It's going to be April 8th, and it should be around, I think, somewhere between like 1 and 3 o'clock. So it's like prime time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting. And they say this is a blood moon, right? Or not a blood moon, but it's going to have that reddish tint that apparently,
I guess,
historically, biblically speaking, is always related to like end times type of stuff.
No, don't start that. But yeah, so it's going to go through Burlington, Vermont, and then Berlin is like the very southern tip of the path of totality. So anything north of Berlin will be in there. So I think like Berlin and Grafton Notch in that area is like the southern end of it. So anything you can do to get up a little farther north, I think like, I'm pretty sure like, I think like Mount Abraham and the Bigelows in that area there would work.
Wow.
I just don't know how easy it is to get up in that area. Millinocket is another option. That's going to be pretty much right in the middle of the path of totality.
Interesting. So you think all these people will be more north to all these different locations?
I mean,
makes sense.
Maybe, but how are they all going to move up there? How are they all going to? Those roads just can't accommodate volume at all.
Yeah, interesting, huh? Yeah, we shall see. I know the local authorities are preparing for it.
Yeah. So it should be interesting. People need to give us a report because if Stomp's not going to do his job and actually get up there, then we're not going to know what's going on.
I know. I guess I should have taken the day off, but oh well. I'm sure we'll hear about it pretty quick.
I was excited, but my plans changed. So anyway, maybe we'll have to ask Dave Shits in the Woods to be our on the scene reporter.
Oh, that'd be great. That's a good idea. You up for that, Dave? Capture some man on the street videos. Dave Shits in the Woods.
Maybe we'll get him maybe we'll throw him a notable for that. A notable eclipse. So,
yeah, that might work.
Anyway, all right. Next up here, Stomp, you got Lodge to Dodge news.
Yeah. It's been a while since we talked about this. I think the last time somebody ran this was Larson or Steve Mason back in 22 or 3, if you look at the fastest known time. But the word around town is that there is somebody that will be doing this. I've been sworn to secrecy at the moment. But this is going to be a pretty cool, shall I say, big deal. So I'll keep you posted, but the Lodge to Dodge was a route that I sort of put together. It's more or less put together based upon a hut to hut, but there's a tag on either side. So you start at the Moosalak Ravine Lodge and then hit Kinsman Ridge Trail for that 13 miles to Lonesome Lake. And then on the eastern side, once you dump out onto Route 16, you actually go into the Wildcats and then back down to Pinkham Notch, Joe Dodge Lodge, and finish. So it's 70.86 miles, 27,000 feet of vertical gain. And so far, the fastest known time is Larson, Ojala, our boy Larson. Mm-hmm. And Steve Mason never posted his time. Steve did it backwards. He did a Dodge to Lodge, starting at Joe Dodge Lodge and then dumping out at Ravine Lodge. And there's different things you could do. You could do it supported, unsupported. You could throw in the peaks along the way or not. There's no real specific rules to that. But there it is. So fastest known time, if you look it up, it's the word Lodge, the number 2, and then Dodge, and you can check it out.
Okay, yeah, and then there's a couple of I had a couple of questions about the route. So,
yeah,
when you cut across from the tricky parts, I guess would be so you come down Lonesome Lake, you stay on the Appalachian Trail, and then you essentially just go up. You go through Lafayette Place Campground, and then you go up Old Bridle. Is that right?
Correct. Up to Greeley. No, not Greeley, Greenleaf Hut.
Greenleaf Hut, that's right.
Right.
Okay, so that's a little bit of a cutoff. Then yeah. It shows here that it shows on the route that you tag Galehead Mountain.
Well, again, that's...
So are you hitting the summits or you don't have to?
Well, like I said, that's I never really made that some hard, fast rule. It's the same with the hut-to-hut. You don't have to hit the summits. The goal with that was just to hit the huts, but... I know that Larson may not have hit all the summits, but Steve may have hit the summits along his attempt. So it's your call. I think the biggest part of it is just to complete 70 damn miles from beginning to end and start or finish at these historic locations. You know, it's Ravine Lodge or Joe Dodge Lodge. So, yeah. Any other questions?
And then it looks like, so the other thing is just to clarify, so you come out of like the Zeeland area, you connect with Mount Avalon Trail,
yep.
And then come down Mount Willard and then connect to the Crawford Path from there.
Yep.
And then the connection over
the Prezies.
To, yep. And then when you get to the end of the Prezies, you're going to exit out the Great Gulf, and then you're going to do a little bit of a road walk. That's about the only road walk you have.
Yeah, to 19 Mile.
To get to 19 Mile. And then from 19 Mile, then you come down
Wildcats down to the Lost Pond Trail, which is the AT, correct? I think that's the AT.
Correct.
So you're not walking Route 16 back, so you take the Lost Pond back to Pinkham.
Correct.
Hardcore, man. Just when you're like, just when you think you're done, you hit 19 Mile and you have to hit the Wildcats and turn it on because it is no joke at the end. It's hardcore.
And I think one of the things that you need to do though is like, I feel like people shouldn't feel the pressure to do like Larson and Steve did. Like you don't need to do this in one day. Like
no.
If you want to do this as your, you know, you have a week off and you want to do this as a 4 or 5 day hike, then
absolutely.
You could easily do that and enjoy yourself.
I would love to see that. You know, break it up, segment it, whatever. Yeah, it's such a cool thing. I'm glad that it's sticking, and I'm really excited about this next adventure. So we'll keep you posted.
Awesome. All right. Next up here, stop. We've got National Park Service sued over cashless policies.
Yes.
So,
pretty interesting story.
Yeah, you see this more and more. Like I see this with like parking places, and it's pretty common now. So National Park Service is increasing their move to accept only credit cards for entrance to parks, and 3 visitors have sued the agency. I love this stuff. I love busybodies that are suing people because I'm too lazy to do this stuff. So it's good. Stick it to the man.
Right.
So they're saying the policy is unreasonable and an abuse of discretion, and that federal law states that legal tender is suitable for all public charges. So Esther Vanderwerf of Ojai, California, Toby Stover of High Falls, New York, and Elizabeth Dasgern of Darien, how did these 3 people find each other? So they brought a lawsuit earlier this month. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting point. Who knows?
Yeah. New York, Georgia. So I guess the thing is about the internet stomp is that every village's idiot can find each other now.
True. Maybe there was
because of the internet, right?
A group of people like national park site or whatever.
Mike. Yeah, every busybody can find each other. But anyway, so they have brought a lawsuit earlier this month basically saying that U.S. currency would not be accepted for entry into a bunch of different national parks here. So they're saying the National Park Service is violating federal law, and they cannot be overlooked in favor of any purported benefit the NPS cashless system could hope to achieve, such as reducing logistics of handling cash collected. Moreover, there is an increased cost to the National Park Service in going cashless, such as additional processing fees that would be borne by the National Park Service and by visitors who ultimately fund the federal government through taxes. So, they want somebody that can give them change sitting there, which...
Yeah, a bucket of pennies.
I like it. I always like talking to that person, like, okay, which way do I go? Right, left? What's the best thing to see? Like, I feel like they need that person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, my prediction on this one is that these people will win, actually, based upon what happened with the OSHA thing, because the SCOTUS is starting to pull back on these agencies, because to change this scheme, it needs Congress. The agencies just can't randomly just change these things. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's an interesting story. I mean, it's literally like a $10 damage.
Well, yeah. But I also think, like, these, you know, you have these vending machines that can take money. You know, they can tell a 5 from a 10 from a 20.
Yeah, sure.
And give change. So,
and that would get rid of the employees. That'll save them some money.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But I mean, like, you go to a casino, believe me, they have those machines that take cash. So
that's really funny. I did some more digging on this too. This is another interesting one. A couple stats from different sites, but the average, I think, was 25% of the nation do not have access to bank cards, or they're bank poor, or whatever. The, you know, they just aren't able to do a card. So that in itself would be a violation of, say, equal protection or whatnot. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. So that would be almost discriminatory to 25% of the population that's in poverty. So this, wow, if
25%,
it'll take some really savvy lawyers, but I'm really looking forward to the follow-up on this story.
That's like, you know what it reminds me of is, every once in a while you'll see this story of, like, it's always like, you know, there's always like one or two people in a town that are, they got an axe to grind. They're very busy. A lot of times they'll, you know, they're writing letters to the editor and doing all that stuff. But like every once in a while, you'll hear a story about a guy that gets mad about like his tax bill. And he'll show up at the thing with like
the bucket of pennies,
a wheelbarrow full of pennies.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to pay my excise tax. And then they'll say, well, we're not going to accept it. I think, I don't know what the legal rulings are, but I love those guys.
Oh, it's a riot. Or the people that show up in the post office with, you know, they want that particular stamp that costs maybe a penny or two. So they have to pay them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would never do that, but I definitely get amused when I'm watching those people. So I don't. I feel bad for the workers, but anyway.
Yeah.
Stomp, you keep us updated.
I will.
All right. I got a couple of listener questions here, Stomp. So the Facebook account, like, don't email me over Facebook, because nobody is monitoring the queue people. I apologize. Our Sounds Like a Search and Rescue Facebook thing, like, I have that set automatically to do our advertisers, but I miss, I don't know. Just
I hear you.
Send it to Instagram or send it to Slasher.
Dude, don't send it my way either. I'm missing messages too. I get these messages, like, for some reason, Instagram divides the message box into 3 or 4 different categories, and I miss these hidden ones that come in. And people, I apologize, but there are some that I just miss. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. There's some, like, dirty emails too that you're getting in there, Stomp.
Yeah, you seeing those?
What's going on with Instagram?
The heck?
Yeah, I was like, I need to go go to confession after looking at your email queue.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
So here's a listener question, and I apologize to Keith and Mike because I'm dropping the ball, which I've been known to do. Keith asks, can you guys give your opinion about the EarFlare app and whether it's useful in SAR or not? So the EarFlare app is an app that it purports, I'm going to pull this up right now here, Stomp. It's called EarFlare. and it purports to be able to convert your phone into a rescue device. And I'm skeptical. I haven't downloaded this because it's like a subscription, but essentially you install this app on your phone, you pay for the subscription and you set up, and then in an emergency, rescuers can find you faster. So what it claims is that it will teach you how to optimize your battery life so that it lasts longer. And then it provides like multiple mechanisms to help locate a lost adventurer via their mobile phone. On-grid features like location caching, location return can identify lost adventurers' GPS coordinates before a ground team is even deployed. And then they've got this off-grid feature called Air Flare User Detection and Location Capture Alert. So they're claiming that essentially like they can, I think, effectively track you even in cases where you're not in a cell phone connected region. So I mean, look, anything's worth trying. Personally, if I'm going to spend money on a subscription service, I'm weary about the idea that like I can optimize the battery on my phone, especially in really cold weather. I would be very skeptical about like my long lasting battery life in cold weather. I'd rather spend the money on a dedicated device right now.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's my opinion.
What's the cost of this app? So it's an app that taps into your phone's GPS?
I think so, yeah.
So you probably would need an iPhone or both, either?
Yeah, you need an iPhone or an Android. And it's $4.99 a year, so I don't know if that's like the base price. So maybe it's worth it to try it. But I think for my own peace of mind, like I don't know if the GPS location coordinates, if there's no cell connection, then I don't see how you, I mean, maybe it has a way that it sort of gives you a tutorial on how to use like the embedded features inside the iPhone to do an emergency if you're out of range, but I don't know. I think I would rather go with a dedicated device.
Oh yeah, I would too. But the other thing that we talked about a few months back was the Motorola Defy, which costs $150. I have a trial model here. So it's a separate device. It's like the size of a beeper that basically turns your phone into a GPS communicator with a much lower cost basis to get up and running, I think. And it's hardened. It's definitely it's not an app. It's a second piece of equipment, but it looks like it's pretty good. And Motorola has been around for decades doing these things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that might be an option as opposed to an app. I don't like that idea.
Yeah. I don't like the idea of relying on your phone. You know, maybe we'll see a future where I do think like eventually like the Starlink technology is going to be made available and that it will be viable to use your phone to connect to a satellite internet connection in the case of an emergency. And I don't know how that'll look for Starlink, but I think that that's the way to go. And I think we're probably only a couple of years away from that.
Yeah.
Next up, Stomp, I guess I'll get your opinion on this. So this question comes from listener Mike. I have a question for you. Maybe you can help me. I volunteer with a New York-based search and rescue team in the Catskills, and I'm looking for a good, durable pair of warm gloves. I was shopping for real leather that I can use during rope drills, carryouts, climbing, etc. Most of the gloves that I have looked at have a lot of mixed reviews. So I think with gloves, I think that, you know, it's one of those purchases I would not overthink. You know, probably try out a bunch of different gloves. My opinion, based on what he's saying, Stomp, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I always have a pair of work gloves with me. So Jeff Rogers tipped me off on this, and basically those work gloves that are like the yellow leather type of gloves that have the warm insulation. So I have a pair of Eddie Bauer that I use, and then I also have a pair of Outdoor Research ones that that I use. I think they're like the Axel work gloves or something like that. So both of them are super warm, but any kind of work glove I think works for me. But I'm not search and rescue, so maybe you have a different opinion.
I can talk, you know, based upon what I see other people doing. I'm sort of an anomaly, go figure. But a lot of people will bring multiple pairs of gloves. First of all, just the hike in, you have a liner pair. When you get to where your destination is, you have a warmer pair, whether it be gloves or mittens, probably gloves. Some people do wear liners, like a microfleece liner with a leather glove. I mean, it's really personal preference. I generally run hot, so I'm typically barehanded, even in winter, carrying somebody out. So it's really personal preference. If you're doing rope work and things like that, you're probably going to want to stick with some leather, or at least a leather reinforced synthetic type of combination. So maybe that's helpful. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm doing like five pairs of gloves. So I'll do the liner gloves. Then I have a pair of like wool mittens that flip over. And then I've got my heavier outdoor research shell mitts. So that's my that's the heavy duty system. But then I also carry usually like two extra pairs of gloves, one of which is those work gloves that I have. And then I recently bought this winter, I bought like a pair of wool mitts that are super warm.
Yep.
So, I mean, maybe it's a little bit heavy, but I don't think you can go wrong, because sometimes like I've had to, you know, have my daughter use like an extra pair of gloves or something like that too. So knowing I have those, it's peace of mind for me.
Okay. You know, I'm obsessed with the new combo, I put together this season, minus 33 microfleece liners covered by a $10 pair of DeWalt plastic dipped winter work gloves. The two of those together sort of met sort of that durability need as well as warmth. And the whole thing costs maybe $20 to put together.
Yeah. You don't have to go too crazy with gloves. When it gets below like say 10 degrees or something like that, then yeah, you definitely have to be aware of it. But ultimately, if it's above 10 degrees, essentially your movement is going to keep you warm. Although search and rescue, that is a problem sometimes because you're standing still for long periods of time. So, no easy answer there, Mike, but hopefully we gave you some ideas.
Yeah. And thank you for your service, Mike.
Yes. Thank you for your service, Stomp. And this is the part of the show where I pick out a dad joke.
Oh, right. My God.
We all know that hiking a mountain can be hard at times. So here's a corny dad joke to help you get over it. Ba-dum-bum.
Why is history a sweet subject?
I give up.
Because it has a lot of dates. Get it? History is a sweet subject because it has a lot of dates, like dates, the fruit, the sweet fruit. Get it?
Oh, man, that's really bad.
Thank you, Lance and Camilla, for my 365 days of dad jokes. I'm still not tracking the ones that I've done, so hopefully I won't repeat. It'll be interesting 200 episodes from now.
I'll probably let you know. I never forget a dad joke.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Hey, what's that sound? It must be time for the pop culture segment with Mike and Stomp.
Moving on to pop culture stuff here, Stomp. So there's a new House of Dragons trailer that dropped today.
Yes, today being Thursday, the day before the release. But yeah, it's out today. So it's coming out in June, I guess. I can't wait. It should be great. It's been a long wait.
That's good. And then... the other thing that I'm keeping an eye on right now is the NCAA March Madness tournament. My phone's been buzzing off the hook because my dad bod's chat group is all talking about our upsets and our brackets.
Oh, so. Boy. Yeah, see, it's another thing I don't get into. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything dude culture Stomp is not involved in.
That's right. So what else is going on out there in pop culture land?
So Stomp, breaking news, Stomp went back onto the Fantasy Pants podcast. So what's the update there? When is that show going to drop?
I think it actually came out early last week, believe it or not. They did a quick turnaround. It was like a spur episode. So I always love hanging out with those guys. And I got to do my same old spell that I always do over and over again and defeated some giant spider creature with some ombre-haired dude on top. So it was pretty interesting. But the reason I mention it is because they've had a hell of a year, the Fantasy Pants crew, and I just want to say you're killing it, guys, and best of luck with everything coming up. And they have a live show coming up that they've been invited to, and it's at Burke Mountain Ski Resort in Vermont. And how cool is this? So check this out. It's called the Mountain Mania, and it's a live show that they'll be doing. Details to follow on that. You can check them out at fantasypants.com or on the IG handle here. But it's a big convention, and it's RPG games, board games, card games, vendors. You can find out more about this on Instagram at Mountain Mania Con, C-O-N. So congratulations, guys. You're going to kill it, I'm sure. And I think they just like hit recently 10K downloads, which is super exciting. So great time. They are literally masters at their crafts. So if anybody's interested in this type of thing at Fantasy Pants, they're definitely worth checking out.
Very good, Stomp. Yep. All right, let's go on to our sponsor, one of our sponsors.
Yes, 48 Peaks Alzheimer's. We just mentioned them a little bit ago, but use your passion for hiking to help end Alzheimer's. In one collective effort, 400-plus hikers will climb New Hampshire's 4,000 footers or create their own challenge to support the mission of the Alzheimer's Association. The annual hiker celebration will take place Saturday, June 8th at Reckless Brewing Co., with raffles, food, and an amazing community. Hike that weekend or any day you want. No fundraising minimums required, but those who raise $100 will receive this year's performance-grade purple t-shirt. Let's turn the White Mountains purple to end Alzheimer's. Visit alz.org/48peaks. That's alz.org/48peaks. And I went into Ski Fanatics the other day. I had to get some of that Nick Wax. We don't really talk about that much, but that Nick Wax series that you can clean your Gore-Tex and then re-waterproof your Gore-Tex, it's definitely good stuff. So I went in there and grabbed some of that stuff, but I was looking at the cash register and all of our stickers are up there. So they've got the little 1-inch ones, the 4-inch white ones, they've got the new metallics, and you can get your stickers there, or you can go down to Spinner's Pizza Parlor in Andover, Massachusetts, off of Dascombe Road, and say hi to Dolls and Pops and grab them over there. So, yeah.
Awesome.
And we have a couple coffee donations this week, which is always really appreciated. Sandstorm 5 donated 5 coffees after completing the New Hampshire 48. That's pretty cool. They complete the 48 and donate to us. That's nice.
I appreciate it.
That's super cool. Krista and Kathy, hashtag K&K48Peaks, donated 5 coffees. And then Cindy Hessian donated 5 as well. And again, really appreciate all the donations to keep us moving along here with the with Mike's trips to Poland and everything else. He needs the flight money.
Right.
Hey, hold my beer. It's time to find out what Mike and Stomp are drinking on this week's Beer Talk.
This is the part of the show where we talk about the beer that we're drinking.
What you cooking there?
I got a Clouded Judgment, which is a New England IPA from Reckless Brewing.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah, I picked up a couple of 4-packs on the way out the door after eating.
There you go. So, well,
I'll be drinking Reckless for the next couple of weeks.
Well, Steve was nice enough to donate a couple of these silver bullets here. They're not labeled yet, but this was...
Oh, those are the good kind.
Oh, yeah. It's the Triple Belgian. Holy moly. Is it delicious, though? It's really tasty.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, Reckless is killing it with the brews. That was another thing, Mike. Before the Fantasy Pants episode there, we were at Reckless hanging out for a bit, and they took me in the back room and showed me all the you know, the big tanks and everything else and the process. It's quite the operation. Reckless is killing it.
Yeah, and matter of fact, that I'll talk about it now. We were able to go to the front. I usually go to the Pine House, so yeah. I hadn't been into the restaurant area before, and the food is fantastic, and the vibe is fantastic, and yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, definitely a 5-star place.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then next up, we are going to talk about recent hikes here, Stomp. So you've gone anywhere? Do you even hike anymore?
I'm trying. Oh, you know, it's like snowmobiling is done. I have to be honest, I'm sort of dealing with this knee condition on my right knee, and it's called, it's something I've had all my life, and it's called Osgood Schlatter's. You could look it up, and basically it's an inflammation of the upper part of the tibia where the patella tendon connects. So if I do too much, say running, hiking, not so much, but at the moment it's flared up. So I have to sort of pull back on everything. And it's generally contributed to tightness of say the quadriceps muscles and the hip flexor. So I'm taking it a little easy. Like today it's killing me. And with PT, sometimes I have to bend down and get low with certain patients. So it's just been rough the last few weeks.
It's tough to get old, Stomp.
But hopefully soon. Yeah, hopefully soon. Beyond that, I was out, you know, helping out with that search down southern New Hampshire. So I got out a little bit, and that was interesting. It was Barnstead is an interesting area. It's sort of low rolling hills, but the boggy terrain is hardcore. So man, yeah, it was pretty interesting. So.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. So, yeah, very good. So, yeah, you kind of, your weekend was kind of taken up for that. I can't, it's hard to give you a hard time for not showing up for my
no kidding.
Winter finish because you're doing, you know, doing good work there. But, yeah, we went out and we had a crew of 7 of us. So, shout out to Jakester and Peter and Nick and Steve and Nobby. And, and Tom and everyone was good. Peters was fun. So we had a good day. I think we ended up parking at the Seven Dwarfs Motel, and you know, it was funny. I pull up in the some of the guys. So Steve, Jake, Nick, and Peter had like shirts. So they had like the slasher, and they were like, "I'm with Mike" shirt. So it was kind of fun. So
that's wicked cool.
Yeah, it was kind of, I was like, it's too much, but it's okay. I appreciated them doing that. So, you know, easy hike. It ends up being like, it was like 10 miles round trip. But I mean, talk about like just a steady, I mean, it's like Garfield, but even more consistently, just like a slight uphill the whole way.
Yeah, including the road.
The road's easy, yeah. The road's simple, and then you know you go along the river, and then you know you're about 1,600 feet, I think, below the summit, and it's just a steady climb. I think it's maybe like a steady 2-mile climb up the Fire Warden's Trail, and yeah, it was good. I met a couple of listeners. Shout out to Mike. He said that his dog was there. Nobby brought his dog, so they were playing a little bit, and. He had said he'd been listening since the beginning, and then shout out to Ro O'Hearn and her friend. They said hi. They're listeners, so yeah, it was cool to meet everybody, and it was a good crowd. And you know, I was like, yeah, it's an accomplishment, but I'm moving on to the next thing. Let's go do the Belknaps or what's next. So it's good.
Oh, I was just going to ask. So what is up next for the warmer weather? Anything in particular?
Yeah, I think I'm going to shift down to the Belknaps and. You know, I'm looking forward to doing a bunch of things. We'll talk about that, I think, in the next segment.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yep.
Excellent.
It was good times. One warning to everybody, just a heads up, me and Nobby kind of found out his dog's perfect. It has total perfect recall and all that stuff. But yeah. The crew at Seven Dwarfs, and I get it, like they, you know, they don't know one dog from the other, but they do ask that you leash your dogs when you're in the parking lot there. So just be aware of that. You know, it's nice enough for them to, you know, offer up the parking option, saves a little bit of time. So just a heads up.
Yeah. I know it was cold, but did you have any back sweat?
I did not. I had my Vaucluse and yeah, matter of fact, I asked the crew to take a look at my back when I was up there, and yeah, there's no back sweat. Matter of fact, I could feel my back was a little cold because the wind was going, and I knew it was working that way. So, but yeah, it worked out perfect.
Nice. We're gonna have Bryce on from Vaucluse. I forget exactly when, but a couple weeks up ahead. Get everybody geared up for the spring and the warmer weather. But does your backpack not provide enough ventilation? Does your back sweat too much when backpacking? As you know, sweat can be extremely uncomfortable on the trails. Plus, sweat is a serious risk factor in both hot and cold climates. As your cold clothes get wet, your core temperature can dramatically fluctuate, and this can result in hypothermia, heat exhaustion, and dehydration. Let's not forget, very uncomfortable. Today is your lucky day because we have good news for you. There's a piece of gear that solves the sweat and ventilation problem, making your backpack more comfortable. Vaucluse Gear's Ultralight Backpack Ventilation Frame. This ultralight frame is a backpack accessory that easily installs in your favorite pack, size 15 liters to 45 liters, and creates a ventilating airflow gap between you and your pack. It's also ultralight, weighing around 3 ounces. That's equivalent to a pair of wool socks. Whether hiking in hot or cold temps, the Ultralight Backpack Ventilation Frame from Vaucluse Gear is a real game changer regarding airflow and ventilation. So visit VaucluseGear.com to order an ultralight ventilation frame today. Use promo code SLASHER, S-L-A-S-R, to enjoy a $5 discount and let them know that Mike and Stomp sent you. And dude, that reminds me. Last weekend, I got to break in my low pack. You got to see it.
Oh, yeah. How'd it feel?
It's phenomenal. I love the pack. It's great. It worked out really well, but it looks like it's 20 years old. It got ripped.
Already.
It got beat to hell. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. C'est la vie.
You know, you got to pop that cherry, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to put it through a car wash soon.
Yes. Or a pressure wash. Get a pressure washer.
Yeah, there you go.
So...
It's time for Slasher's Notable Hike of the Week. If you want to be considered for the Hike of the Week, simply tag Slasher on your social media post.
All right, Stomp, Notable Listener Hikes of the Week. What do we got?
All right, so we have a bunch this week. So if you want to tag Slasher on your adventure to be considered for the Hike of the Week, do so. And let's see what we have here. Tristan Holbrook, the Hancocks for 28 and 29 of the New Hampshire 4,000 footers. Meg's 0682, Height Cannon via the Kinsman Ridge Trail, which I'm coming around. I in the summer, the Kinsman Ridge Trail from Cannon is a nightmare, but in the winter, it's actually really nice.
Well, going up, it's tough, but going down, I mean, you just sled down there, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Sigurd J, Sunrise Hike, Monroe, Washington, and Jefferson, and then also did a Zebon Traverse. C. Gothberg did Mount Silly, and just so people know, Mount Silly is in Woodstock, and there are three mountains in this little area that are on the 500 highest list that you can get to from the Elbow Pond location. Really nice bushwhacks. Carrie hikes a lot, hiked Monroe, Washington, Jefferson, Adams for 41 out of and 40 to 44 for her first round of 48. Finished the New Hampshire 48 with a Zebon's Traverse as well, along with solo dot hikes. So congratulations, Carrie.
Okay, that's in the running. That's in the running.
Yeah, I'm assuming she's never going to hike again now that she's finished everything. Yep. let's see. Sandstorm 5 finished the Winter 48 on Mount Washington. Damn, this is going to be a tough one this week, Mike. It's shaping up tough.
Yeah.
Dave Schitz in the Woods and Liz Fay did an overnight at North Kearsarge Fire Tower, and they've also done a ton of other things, but could not fit them all in this week. Cindy Chess did you'll recognize these. Mount Clem, yeah. Mount Mac, and Anna for 7 out of 12 for the Belknap range. How cool is that? I love that area.
Yeah, I like that too.
Oh, it's so nice. That friggin' hiker, Sages Ravine and Bear Mountain on the AT. I'm not too familiar with the location of these. Let's see, Dave Schitz is mentioned here again with Liz. Forbes Mountain, Tinkham Hill, Hutchins Hill in Danbury. Laura Eli, first sunrise of spring on Lantern Hill with the Westerly Morris Dancers. So, and you know, it reminded me of any summer day up on Mount Monadnock where there's 5,000 people up on top. Yeah, the picture she posted had a bunch of people from this dance troupe. So that was super cool.
Yeah.
And our buddy Andy from the Cog Railroad, Boreal Badass. I've got that name right. Did you hear this story in the background, Mike? I mixed up his name. I was trying to dissect his Instagram handle, which is Boreal Badass. But what he does is he puts an X at the beginning and X at the end. And I translated it as Xbox, Real Badass.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You remember that?
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me some shit for it, but... So he did High Cannon, finished, well, that was his last hike for winter with a stop at Lonesome Lake. And then finally, Dan V. Devey did Cannon and the Kinsmans. So nice work, everybody, getting out there crushing peaks.
Yeah, and Stomp, as you were talking, I was just looking up Sages Ravine and Bear Mountain. So that looks like it's on the Appalachian Trail, like Connecticut, Massachusetts area.
Okay. All right.
So
nice work.
Very good.
What are you thinking?
What do you think? What do you think?
Man, I think we might have a tie here, maybe? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It is, you know, Sandstorm and Carrie hikes a lot, I think. Get it this week.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yep.
Yeah, great minds think alike, huh?
That's true. That is true, Stomp.
Let's dive into some White Mountains history, shall we?
All right, so you want to talk a little bit of history?
Let's do it. It's been a little bit for history.
Yeah. I got a couple more segments I'm going to run the next couple of weeks, but I thought this one is a shorter one. But I thought this one piqued my interest because when I was hiking up Amonoosuc Ravine, I've seen this plaque before. And I kind of forgot about it, but I took a picture this time, so I had it in my photo, so I was able to look it up. So when you hike on the Amonoosuc Ravine Trail, heading up towards Lakes of the Clouds, Hot in Mount Washington, there is a plaque in memory of a gentleman by the name of Herbert Judson Young. So all the newspaper articles reference him as Judson Young. So that's how I'm going to reference him. So... Judson, so the plaque that is on Amonoosuc, it's on a rock, and the plaque essentially commemorates his death. So he had passed away, I think, on December 1st, 1928, and there's a plaque there that essentially just, you know, memorializes his life, and it indicates that he died near this spot. While hiking Mount Washington. So he was an 18-year-old freshman. So this goes back to 1928. So the Dartmouth Outing Club, I believe the Dartmouth Outing Club started in like 1909, Stomp. And then they obviously they're well known for all the trail work that they did in and around like Moosalock and that area there. The orange signs are iconic, but they also got out to some of the, you know, the larger summits and did outings. I think by like 1920, the Sherman Adams Building, which is named after, I think, a former governor of New Hampshire, Sherman Adams, when he was a young man, went to Dartmouth. And I think he was like the president of the Dartmouth Outing Club. At that point in time, the Outing Club had like something like 93% of the population of Dartmouth was a members of the Outing Club. Mm-hmm. And being on like the board of the Outing Club was considered the most prestigious thing that you could do at Dartmouth at the time. So everybody was involved in this. So Judson Young, again, he was an 18-year-old freshman he grew up in Missouri, and I'm assuming that because he lived far away over Thanksgiving break, instead of going home, he joined five other members of the Dartmouth Outing Club, you know, maybe one or two other freshmen, and then some upperclassmen over the Thanksgiving weekend for a climb up Mount Washington via Tuckerman Ravine. They had a plan to ascend the mountain and then stay overnight at Lakes of the Cloud Hut. Unfortunately, the party ran into a blizzard and they failed to locate the hut and eventually found their way below treeline. Judson Young started suffering from severe cold. Presumably, he had, you know, little cold weather hiking experience, considering, you know, he was new to New England, grew up in Missouri, and, you know, the assumption is that he relied on some of the older members of the climb for guidance. Unfortunately, his condition as they made it below treeline continued to get worse through the night. Eventually, three of the hikers decided to bolt for what at the time was the base station for Boston and Maine Railroad. We now know it as the railway. We now know it as the Cog Railway. And then two members of the party stayed with Young while the remaining party, basically their goal was to go back and get a toboggan so that they could help bring Young to the base station. So they did accomplish that. They got down to the base station, went back up to rescue Young, got him set up in a sled. But unfortunately, he succumbed to exposure and died en route to the Cog Railway. So The article in the Dartmouth paper that covers Young's death indicated that the outing leader had made all the right choices given the situation, and that, you know, unfortunately, you know, even with the heroic efforts of the members of the party to rescue him, you know, the story just didn't end well for Judson Young. So 18 years old.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Young. Too young.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar long time ago. Around like, yeah, a long time ago, similar theme around this, like that, you know, late November period is so dicey where, you know, you can get all kinds of crazy weather, and I don't think people are always expecting it. So clearly they ran into a buzzsaw of weather and it didn't turn out well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me, this forecast is pretty gnarly for Saturday. Speaking of buzzsaws, really careful if you're going out into those higher summits, especially around the Prezies.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
advisable.
Yeah, it's not a weekend to go too crazy, but
good stuff, though.
Yeah, so I just thought it was an interesting story, and, you know, to think an 18-year-old kid going out there and, you know, probably not having a lot of background in what the mountains were like. You know, he probably had hiked Mousalaki maybe a couple times when he was in Dartmouth, but I imagine he probably didn't have a lot of experience coming from Missouri.
True. I wonder what he was wearing.
I'm assuming probably that might have been an issue, as he got wet, didn't have the gear. I don't know what gear they wore in 1928, but
yeah, we should find out. We should do a talk about that sometime.
Yeah, I'll do some research on that.
I know it was a lot of heavy wool. Like the real mountaineers back then had the wool and probably overkill for weight and whatnot, but they were ready.
Yeah.
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 All right, good.
Slasher's hiking topic of the week.
So, all right, Stomp. So moving on to the main segment of the week, and I think we've talked a little bit about this, so I don't know how long this will be, but the winter 4,000 footer list. So I think we wanted to just cover this for anybody that was thinking about doing it. And I can talk a little bit about the statistics around this, but just to give people background, I think, you know, my story is probably similar to a lot of people where I focused on the 4,000 footer list. I did do some winter hiking. I wasn't doing crazy numbers of winter hikes, but I did do some stuff over the course of my normal 4,000 footer list finish. So I think at the end of the day, between 2015 and 2019, I had about 15 or so 4,000 footers mixed in there. I think one of my first 4,000 footer stomp was like that trip that me, you, and Jimmy Chaga took on Mount Isolation. That might have been like my second one, I think.
Okay.
So, I mean, I wasn't focused on it at that point, but I think essentially, like, looking at the numbers, I had, like I said, about 15 summits just through normal hiking with friends over the course of those 5 years. And then I think 2020 and 2021, I started, you know, consciously saying, like, all right, I'm going to start picking off summits. And I did four hikes over the course of 2020, 2023, or 2021 winter, and then four hikes 2021 to 2022. And at that point, I think I was getting close to halfway. And then for the last, I guess, two winters, I did nine hikes last winter and then eight hikes this winter to finish up. So, you know, I think it's pretty realistic. Like, if you're doing it casually, like a 5-year plan, knocking off, like, and factoring in, like, maybe hiking every other weekend in the winter, I think you can knock off the winter 4,000 footer list doing that.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, it all depends on your work situation, your schedule. I mean, you could do it at night.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. I mean, you know, people do this single season. I think a single season, essentially, my view on this is you probably need to do maybe about 26, 27 total hikes. So, you know, you're talking two hikes a week, probably, to do a single season. Maybe, I think we did a deep dive on this with Mike Maisel. He has better numbers than I do, but I think you probably got to do, like, you know, you really got to link them together, or just do two hikes a week for most of the winter.
Yep. Or if you're in that other category, you can do a Derratissima in like 3 days.
Yeah. You can do that if you want.
Those people exist.
Yeah. And Stomp, I would say the toughest hikes just on paper for me was the Zeeland Bonds Traverse. That's a long day, no matter how you cut it. Twins and Gailhead, that's going to be a long day, no matter how you cut it. And I don't think you want to break those up. You just got to suck it up and do those.
Hold on. Why do you say that? Twins and Gailhead, from what approach? Like,
So we car spotted. So I think the best way to do it is grab North Twin, South Twin, and Gailhead.
And then down.
You know, you park one car at like Beaver Brook parking spot on by Twin Mountain, and then the other one at Seven Dwarfs.
Okay. How many miles?
I think it's about 14 or so.
Okay.
I found the Carters to be difficult, the middle and South Carter hike. That's always difficult. And then if you got to throw Carter Dome in there, that's a tough one.
Hold on. I have questions. So yep. You came up what approach for the Carters? You're coming up from...
So I knocked off the Carters from... I parked at 19 Mile, and then I did a little bit of a road walk down to that, like...
The camp.
That campsite there.
Yeah.
The campground, and then I cut in from the campground up the Imp Trail.
Okay.
Hit South Carter and then Middle Carter.
Right.
And then down, you know, into Zeta Pass and then down 19 Mile.
Gotcha.
I found that to be like just a long, annoying hike.
Were you breaking trail or was it broken? I found those to be somewhat enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't know. I was with Steve from the Cape, so I don't know if we were breaking trail on that one or not. I just felt like it was a long day.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, a couple of other ones like Carrigan, you've got the road walk. So it adds a lot of extra miles. Garfield, you've got a road walk. So it's not hard, but it adds extra mileage.
Owl's Head, you've got a road
Owl's
walk.
Owl's Head is long. I think East Osceola, don't sleep on that one. That one's super hard in winter.
Yeah.
Tri-Pyramids is another one that's, you know, no matter which direction you go, that's going to be a long day.
I did that this winter. I found that to be pretty enjoyable, but you're right. It's just that long road walk that you just have to be mentally geared for and ready to accept and just enjoy it. Focus on the pleasantries of your surroundings and whatever else.
Yeah. Not a lot of views there that way. Low effort hikes for me. I got Jackson, Pierce, Tecumseh, Cabot, and Cannon. Those are pretty casual.
Yeah.
Most memorable, I had a couple of overnight trips. I think the Randolph Mountain cabins, anytime you do that, that's going to be a great time. You can tag Madison, Adams, Jefferson. I got all three of those from the cabins. Mount Carrigane was an interesting hike for me. We did an overnight. That was where one of our colleagues on the hike experienced hypothermia. I've told that story before.
Sure.
And then overnighting on Lonesome Lake. I think that setting up tents by Lonesome Lake is not a good idea, because now that I understand how cold air drops into a bowl, like I realized that like it was 10 degrees colder than it was forecasted. So Lonesome Lake is not a good area to tent.
Hmm. Okay.
I would say other memorable things for me, like the views on the Presidentials. I got so many good undercasts on the various hikes on the Presidentials. I would say that super incredibly cold Liberty Flume hike that we went on, Stomp, was incredible.
Yeah.
Risky, fun. But also a great day.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Risky is definitely true with any of these hikes in the winter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I would say sledding down the Cog Railroad, and then also the South Hancock, those were probably the two best sledding moments.
Hmm.
And as far as my gear evolution went, so I started in 2015. My first winter hike, I wore an external frame backpack, my ski jacket, and ski pants, and I brought about 25 pounds worth of peanuts and trail mix that I didn't need. So my gear has evolved quite a bit. I did change backpacks. I used to carry a 55-liter Duder Act Light backpack. I did about half my hikes with the Duder, and then the last two or three years, I switched over to a Hyperlite Southwest 3400, which is a 55-liter pack. Gear that I added. So I added that thermos. So remember, we've talked about this before, Stomp, when my friend got hypothermia. Like I always carry a thermos full of hot chocolate or hot water.
Mm-hmm.
Sit pad. So I always bring either a sit pad or a sleeping pad that I can blow up. I'm definitely more apt to bring a sleeping bag now. I do bring a bivy, but more and more I've been adding just a sleeping bag into it because I've got a lighter weight sleeping bag that I can bring that gives me, 8 to 10 hours of safety. Snowshoes, I pretty much wore MSR Evos through this entire, the last 7 or 8 years. They've been fine. The only thing they don't have is the televator lift, which I now have new snowshoes that have that, so I guess I missed that.
Yep.
I only used crampons maybe 3 or 4 times during the entire time that I climbed. I used them once on Earline. I think I used them on, maybe I used them on East Osceola. I can't remember. I think I did. And then I used them, I think, going up Lowe's Path. And I might have used them 1 or 2 more times. But that was about it.
Right, so when you say crampon, are you talking about the deeper hill sounds or like a 12-point mountaineering type of thing? Or
The 12-point. So I have Gravel, maybe the 10-point. They're G10s.
Okay.
So the Gravel, they're the true crampons.
Yes.
With the spikes. I mean, you can really like bite in and climb on ice with those things.
Right, yeah. I could see that being really helpful on East Osceola. Holy moly.
Yeah, super steep. I went through 3 pairs of boots. So I think my original boots were like these leather, not insulated boots that I had for like maybe the first season. And then I quickly bought Salomon 200-gram boots that I wore for maybe like 3 years. And then maybe 3-4 years ago, I bought Keen Revel 4s, which are 400-gram Thinsulate.
Yep.
And I've been running with those things ever since. In addition to that, I had cheap gaiters that I bought off of Amazon that were nylon, but those started sweating out on me, so I got rid of those and I switched to Outdoor Research gaiter Crocs gaiters. So those things are much nicer.
Okay.
My glove system never really changed. I talked about this before, essentially liner gloves with a wool mitten that flips open. And then I've got my outdoor research shells that, you know, so that keeps me super warm. And then I've got a couple of additional gloves that I talked about earlier. I think, Stump, one of the things I've changed up is I've added a lot more clips to my backpack. So I've got a lot of stuff on the outside of my pack for easy access.
Yeah.
I got a lot better at that over time.
Well, speaking of that, how do you attach your snowshoes? I have a lot of people that ask me how to do that, and they have trouble with it.
So it's evolved over time. So the snowshoes, originally I would put the snowshoes with the crampons facing out on the deuter. I would have one side on either pocket, and then I had like compression straps that I could just basically cinch up, so I had the weight evenly distributed on the side. The only down part of that is that I covered up with the water bottle holder, so then I would be forced to put my water bottle either in the back pocket or inside the backpack itself, which was kind of a pain in the neck. I did play around a little bit with like an insulated thing that was clipped onto my backpack, but I never really liked it because it just moved around a lot.
Yes. I understand so, that well.
I played around a little bit with the deuter, putting the snowshoes underneath the brain on top, but I didn't love that either because
it's in the way.
I just felt like it's a weird sort of balance.
Yeah.
The weight's a little too heavy. So then when I switched over to the Hyperlite, it became easy because I simply just put them in the pocket in the back and they just sit there.
Interesting. So the far back.
Yeah. So, and I feel like the weight distribution for whatever reason just works better that way. And then you can also stick them in the brain if you want to. It's not really a brain. They have like a compression strap to go over the top. And I've done that before as well. So, but cool. Yeah, I mean, that's basically the main options is essentially like put them in a pocket, split them up and put one on each side or put them on top and through the brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I have my water hanging right off my right strap in the front with a carabiner and it's insulated. So it opens up the two side pockets. And I've actually resorted to getting, right now I have it's probably 2 feet, a bungee, a gray bungee. It's really cool looking. So it's not like this eyesore that will strap around. So I can stick them in the side pockets, teeth out, and then just bungee them on. Done. Yeah. I've been so frustrated with the whole process of trying to find a good spot for my snowshoes, but I think I have it worked out now finally.
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I use my Ultimate Direction, my 25 liter to hike Mount Hill, and I had my snowshoes. And what I did is I took like a carabiner clip that's a double clip, and I was able to connect the straps together to form like basically like a catch for my snowshoes and the bottom. And then I had another compression, like an elastic strap that I was able to strap around them, and I was able to put them on there, and we ended up using our snowshoes because it was like mashed potatoes halfway up. So I took them off, but they were easy to mount. Worked out well.
Does your pack or any of your packs have bottom straps? Because mine
they do. And that's what I did with the Ultimate Direction is I took the bottom straps and I connected them with a carabiner.
Yeah,
and then that basically forms a pocket that the snowshoes drop into perfectly.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because I'm looking forward to using that bottom strap for my Thermalite pad. The reason being, I mean, you could put that pad anywhere, but I like the fact that if it's on the bottom, you can rest your pack on the ground and not saturate the bottom of your pack, which should be somewhat water resistant anyway, but it never is 100%. So I like that idea. So I'm going to try that out next season, if not this season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the gear evolution, I think just in general, knowing where to put all my stuff inside my backpack, having more pockets on the outside, knowing to crack open like a hand warmer before I get out of my car so that it's warm when I start hiking.
Yeah.
Knowing to start cold and being self-assured that, okay, I'm going to warm up so I don't have to worry about it versus having to stop and take off all my gear. Like over time, those instincts and those capabilities, they start building up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like little tricks you start using. It's like, all right, well, make sure I have a clip on my shoulder so I can clip my hiking poles and flip them over the back. So if I don't want to deal with them, it's very easy to grab them and put them away.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing, Stomp, that I sort of realized over time is I somehow stopped becoming a solo hiker. So in the very beginning, I mean, I was mostly a solo hiker.
Yeah.
And then over the course of the, you know, the time, I picked up all these friends, you know, so it's like, you know, shout out to my friend Jonathan and Tom, who, you know, Jonathan got me started and Tom was always along the way for sure. And they sort of, Jonathan gave me and Tom like all the information we needed and took us out, which I'll be forever grateful. And then, you know, Steve and Jake and Peter and Nick and Nobby and, you know, you and Jimmy Chaga and Casey and everybody. I mean, there's a million people I could list that I've picked up and I know I can go hiking with. So it's like, it's another one of these things where, you know, you're picking up these peaks and you're checking them off, but you're also gaining all these friends as you go along, which is cool.
Yeah, it's a great, great community.
Yeah. So, and then shout out to all the listeners for, you know, all the, you know, getting to know everybody has been amazing. So it's great. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Well done.
Thanks. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm on to the Belknaps next.
All 12.
Yeah. Well, no, I think I got like four left.
Oh, that's not too bad. Not too bad at all. I think I'm sort of shifting back into my 500 mode for the warmer weather.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this time of the year is where I start thinking about like the Belknaps. I start thinking about the Ossipee Range. You know, I kind of avoid like the higher summits for the next, you know, up until mid-May. I'll get back out there.
It's slipping my mind. What's the name of the range over by Castle of the Clouds with Char and all
that's
that?
That's the Ossipees.
That's the Ossipees. All right, cool.
Yeah, Black Snout and Roberts. Yeah, that whole area is fantastic.
Great. Yeah, that's definitely on the radar.
Stomp. So moving on to recent search and rescue news. So we're going to stick with the local stories now because we're tight on time here. So let me just pull this first one up here. Missing elderly woman found deceased in Lebanon, New Hampshire. So 2:35 a.m. on Sunday, March 17th, Lebanon Police Department was notified of a missing elderly woman from their town. They deployed personnel along with a canine unit to Oak Ridge Road to look for her. A couple hours of searching, they requested assistance from other agencies. The woman was identified as a 76-year-old woman from Lebanon suffering from Alzheimer's disease. She had walked away from her home in the early morning hours. Husband noticed she was gone and quickly notified police.
That's so sad.
It's a horrible story. Lebanon Fire Department, Upper Valley Wilderness Response, New England Canine, the Lebanon community all came together for the search. And, you know, they found, you know, the effort was around about a mile from the area where she had gone missing. And around 1:30 p.m. that day, a fisherman alerted authorities to a sighting he had along the Connecticut River. And, the state New Hampshire State Police helicopter unit was able to track the sighting and they located the body. And unfortunately they brought her to shore around 2:45 p.m. And notified next of kin. So about 12 hours after she went missing, they located her. So terrible story.
It is. Maybe that's something we can touch upon with 48 Peaks Alzheimer's. Maybe they can provide some tips as to what families can do to I don't know, mitigate a situation like this? It's got to be a challenge. You know, you have somebody that has dementia, and this happens a lot. And what can you do with this? Only so much you can do.
Well, that's it. I mean, the family's doing what they either... Well, there's two things that go on. One is either the... You know, and this would be my instinct, is the family wants to keep her with the family.
Absolutely.
You know, for as long as they can, because it's probably better than being in a home.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you take the risk of something like this happening. The other issue is financially. Maybe, you know, there's a financial challenge there where the cost of putting her in a home isn't feasible for them. And then, you know, this happens. So it's tough to know, but it's just a sad story. So, yeah, we'll definitely maybe bring this up and talk to them about it.
Yeah.
The next one here, Stump. These are really depressing. So we got another deceased. So on March 16th, New Hampshire Fish and Game initiated a large-scale land search in the town of Barnstead, searching for any clues related to the disappearance of Ashley Turcotte, 33, of Barnstead. So Turcotte had been missing since January 4th, 2024. So going on a little over 2 months. And search teams consisted of the Pemmies, Lakes Region, New England Canine, and New Hampshire National Guard. So Pemmy search, Lakes Region search. So about 70 volunteers began searching around 8:30, conducting line searches in designated areas. Shortly before 11, a search team consisting of the newly organized New Hampshire National Guard volunteer search and rescue team, along with conservation officers, located a deceased body believed to be that of Turcotte. The body was about a half a mile from her vehicle. Where her vehicle was found on the day she went missing, and confirmation on identity is still pending. So, you know, big sort of cross-agency coordination on this one with Fishing Game, Barnstead Fire Department, Belknap Sheriff Department, New Hampshire Red Cross, and the Barnstead Police Department, along with all the other volunteer search and rescue organizations. So, sad story, but luckily the family at least has some closure.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, and this one's been on Reddit, and a lot of speculation, so I don't really know what happened on this one, but yeah. I'm just glad the family has closure.
Yep.
All right. Hiker rescued from Ammonoosuc Ravine on Mount Washington. So, wait a minute. Didn't we already do this one? Oh, no, we didn't do this. So, Thursday, March 7th, 23-year-old from Georgetown, Kentucky, was hiking Mount Washington when he went off trail and into the Ammonoosuc Ravine. The hiker fell and hit his head and face and lost one of his sneakers and eventually became hypothermic. So he called 911 requesting help. And conservation officers were able to ascertain his GPS locations. He was well off trail in a drainage ravine alongside one of the tributaries of the Ammonoosuc River, north of the Ammonoosuc Ravine Trail, at about 3,600 feet of elevation. I feel like we did this story, Stomp, but...
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think this is a repeat, so I apologize, listeners. But anyway, the hiker was given boots, food, warm drinks, proper winter gear, and a headlamp, and was escorted back to the trail.
Yeah, or was it the one that the person went to Lake of the Clouds hut dungeon there and sheltered there? Maybe we're mixing that one up.
No. I think we did that one as well. But
all right, I can cut this whole thing out if you want.
No, it's fine. It's fine. So, well, we'll see. We'll see. You work your magic on the edit.
Sure.
So, all right. This story is Friday, March 8th, 2024. A 51-year-old female hiker was descending when she slipped on a steep and icy section of trail. After sliding on rock for about 25 feet, she sustained injuries that did not allow her to continue. Hiking partner called 911. The hiker was identified as somebody out of Montreal, Canada. She had five other hiking partners that started with her around 10 a.m. that morning, expecting to complete the Franconia Ridge Loop in daylight hours. The group did not stay together. They left this woman and her partner without a light source. And they started hiking down Falling Waters Trail from the top of Haystack at 4 p.m. at approximately 6:30. They couldn't see well. They fell on a steep section of trail. We're waiting for the rescuers to arrive. Another Good Samaritan hiker came on the duo and gave the hiker a sleeping pad to lay on and another layer of clothes to keep warm. The rescue crew hiked up about a mile to her location and carried her down. So kudos to that Good Samaritan hiker. Yeah. We always talk about this all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
So don't leave your friends. Don't split up.
Exactly.
But luckily, this Good Samaritan was there with a light source and a pad to wait it out. But call came in at 6:40, and they got her back to the road around 10 p.m. So that's a pretty good time.
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, not too far up.
Nope. And then this last one, a lot of death today, Stomp.
Yeah, sort of.
Unfortunately.
Sort of a downer here at the end.
Yeah, yeah. This is sad. So a woman died after falling about 600 feet down Tuckerman Ravine on Mount Washington. So
yeah, I heard about
Saturday. Yeah, 600 vertical. I'm assuming that it was a lot of rain and freeze, and maybe like they were skiing and they just
hit the ice,
get a bite or something. Yeah,
yeah. I would think so. I'm not too sure though. It's not my expertise.
Yeah, there's a quote in here. I think over the course of the week, we lost about 13 inches of snow in the snowpack. It was warm. There was rain. It was wet snowpack. The temperatures dropped. It got cold and it froze and became a firm surface, said Jeff Fongjemi, director of Mount Washington Avalanche Center. Responding teams from Mount Washington Avalanche Center and U.S. Forest Service worked to evacuate the skier from the mountain and... Yeah, I guess the comment here is that there was like some other injured skiers that weren't as severe, but they had this elevated sense of emergency. It was a busy day. It's not usually as busy as it was. So there was two other skiers that sustained traumatic injuries from ice and rocks at the same time. So just a rough day overall on that day. But yeah, 20-year-old woman, 600 feet of vertical, she fell down and passed away.
Terrible. If any listeners have any insight as to who could come on to discuss the bowls on the eastern side of Washington that are backcountry skiers or in that field, definitely drop us a direct message. I think it might be a really good topic to cover at some point.
Yeah,
big deep dive.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk to somebody about it. But
yeah.
But that's it, Stomp. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad that you got your new studio, and I'm looking forward to getting out this weekend. I'm going to get somewhere on Sunday, somewhere low, so maybe I'll get the bell naps.
Okay.
Sunday.
All right, cool. Nice. All right, welcome back, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to learn more about the topics covered in today's show, please check out the show notes and safety information at slasherpodcast.com. That's slasrpodcast.com. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Instagram. We hope you'll join us next week for another great show. Until then, on behalf of Mike and Stomp, get out there and crush some mega heats.
Now covered in scratches, blisters, and bug bites, Chris Staff wanted to complete his most challenging day hike ever.
Fish and game officers say the hiker from Florida activated an emergency beacon yesterday morning. He was hiking along the Appalachian Trail when the weather started to get worse. Officials say the snow was piled up to 3 feet in some spots, and there was a wind chill of -1 degree.
And there's three words to describe this race. Do we all know what they are?
Holy one,
hell! Lieutenant James Neeland, New Hampshire Fish and Game. Lieutenant, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
What are some of the most common mistakes you see people make when they're heading out on the trails to hike here in New Hampshire?
It seems to me the most common is being unprepared. And I think if they just simply visited hikesafe.com and got a list of the 10 essential items and had those in their packs, they probably would have no need to ever call us at all.